हरिः ॐ सहनावगतु सहनभुनक्तु सहवीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावरीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Okay, so page 53, Sutra Prakashita. Srila Baladeva Vibhushan introduces the next sutra by reciting the objection espoused by the Advaita school, Purva Paksha. But Brahman has two forms, Saguna and Nirguna, right? Because that's what we were discussing before, was this aspect of Saguna and Nirguna. The Saguna form is Brahman covered by Sattva-gun. This form is omniscient, endowed with all powers and creates the universe. The Nirguna Brahman is existence alone, perfect and pure. The Saguna Brahman is how Brahman is expressed through words of the Vedas. The Nirguna Brahman is the final essence realized through the Vedas. Siddhanta, this idea is refuted in the following sutra. In this sutra, Vyasadeva asserts that the Vedas describe only one kind of Brahman, one absolute truth, Vasudeva. Right? Because they're when you bring up all these different things, because you have verses that say talk about Dwait and about Advait, right? So they're going to favor the Advait. But the verses that talk about Dwait, then they have to accept because it's Shastra, right? And being agnostic, they have to accept Shastra. So then the problem comes up is how do they deal with that in their philosophy? So they deal with it by splitting it into two aspects, right? They say two Brahmans, but actually then the one is, you know, everything's Brahman, but then they're differentiating in Brahman, but not on the transcendental platform. They differentiate and create material. There's illusion, there's jivas, there's this, saguna Brahman. And so, with that, then they try to say that the nirguna is the higher position. Because there's verses that talk about the nirguna position is higher, but that means nirguna means without material qualities. But they take it that there's no qualities at all. They don't understand that there's transcendental qualities. Right? They'll attribute a few. Existence alone, perfect, pure. These are all qualities. But if you say, "Oh, those are qualities," no, there's no, you know, it's just a problem for them, right? Because any philosophy is not complete. Once you get to a particular point, there's always going to be a problem, like that. Is that my sense? It's just the way it is. So only technically, the Vaishnava Vedanta can deal with all levels of existence. It means Vaishnava Vedanta is the only philosophy that does not have dogma. It's the only one where everything can be discussed. Now, whether it's tasteful to discuss it or not, that's another thing, but that's a point of etiquette. But it can be discussed. But in all other schools, because it's incomplete, that point of incompleteness, that's where the dogma comes up. They're unable to deal with that, so it's just a matter of you have to have faith, you have to this, that, or whatever it is. They have their different methods, you know, one their nigrahastan is, this is the devil, you know, like that, and that's it. Just put everything's, you know, put off the table. Does that make sense? So this is their argument, because we've just made the point that the Lord, He merges into Himself. So that means there's not a difference. Because they're saying, yes, the Saguna Brahman merges into the Nirguna Brahman. Right? And they're different. Right? And they claim to be the Advaitists. Right? And we're saying, no, they're the same. So the Lord is one. So there's no problem here, right? Does that make sense? Yes.
Do they ever deal with an any level? Why would the Nirguna Brahman want to become a Saguna Brahman and then...
They'll just say pastimes. But then pastimes mean there's a personality, there's qualities. So the point is they'll just... They're just saying things to get you off the topic. That's all. It's just to distract, because they can't actually discuss them properly. Like that. Okay. Yes.
But this last two sentences, they sound very logical. The Saguna Brahman is how Brahman is expressed through words. Because if he has qualities, we can describe him, so we do it through the Vedas.
Yes.
And Nirguna is the final essence, that's what we also say.
But what kind of Nirguna do we mean by Nirguna Brahman?
Transcendental.
Yeah, meaning the person. They don't understand this. So you have to understand what they mean by their words. Mm-hmm. So the same words are being used. Means those who follow the Vedas are all using the same words, because they're all words of the Vedas. Just their interpretation, that's hermeneutics. Hermeneutics means how you interpret it.
So their Nirguna is different from ours?
Their Nirguna means Brahma Jyoti. Okay.
Because we could also say those two.
Of course. Just how many times have we seen up to now in the last, let's say 2 years, Prabhupada quotes the term Sarvam Kalvidam Brahma. Right? So we say the same thing. The difference is we know it's the person who is everything. Well, they think it's the Brahma Jyoti that it's everything. Everything else comes from Brahma Jyoti. We're saying everything comes from the person. So you're taking two ends of the spectrum. Now, the person having, by his glorious qualities and personality activities, that he is, you know, how you say, bright with, the glory of that, that makes sense. Right? But to say that there's a Nirguna Brahman that has nothing, and then from that comes all these wonderful things. But actually those wonderful things aren't that wonderful, because it's all Maya, and then it goes back into nothingness, and that's the special. That's backwards. You understand? So the one makes sense, the other one doesn't make sense. How could from nothing come variety? No, variety comes from variety. We see in everything, you know, you have a butterfly, it makes more butterflies. It's not that the butterfly makes a Tyrannosaurus Rex. You're right, you know. Does that make sense? You know, the kids there with the butterflies in the jar, oh, cute this, that, and then the next day you hear this smashing and crunching and that. And then when the mother goes to open the door, this Tyrannosaurus Rex head sticks out, you know. Like, no, it doesn't happen. You know what I'm saying? So the point is, from one, whatever it is, you always get the same thing. So therefore, the Lord, when he expands, you always get the Lord. That's the point of the Om Purnam. He's complete. Does that make sense? Because they're attached to this. Why would they be so focused on this? They're attached to this because they can be God then. Well, if you follow our philosophy, they're not God, they're always servant. And they're desperately trying to get away from that. Right. This is the last, how you say, that's what Prabhupada mentions, the last snare of Maya is that you're God. So this is they've tried everything else and it didn't work for them, because they could see the futility of it. But with this, then Maya's caught them. You know, that they can be God. So I said, yeah. Okay. Sutra 1.1.10. Gati samanyat. Gati, the conception, samanyat, because of uniformity. Translation, the Lord is not covered by the gunas, because all the scriptures describe the Lord as having qualities beyond the material gunas. Sri Govindabhasya. Gati means conception. The Lord is not covered by the gunas, because there is conformity, samanyata. In Vedic statements concerning conceptions, gati of the Lord, right? So there's not going to be any contradictory statements in the Veda. It's a very important part. It means your Mayavadis are taking it as that there's differences, there's contradictions, and you see those who in the same line like to speculate, you know, the modern academia and this and others, you know, Vedic scholars, not of the Vaishnava school, then they'll see the lack of conformity. Right? So that's always the point, that how you reject the Veda is that you say, oh, this doesn't make sense. This and this don't compute, so therefore I can throw out the whole thing. Right? Does that make sense? You know, just like I go to the party to have fun, and in the morning I can't even remember what happens. But, of course, I'll go to the next party because of, quote-unquote, their conformity, right? Is there any conformity? No. You have to have no brains to do that. So everything they do lacks brain. But when it comes to the Veda, oh, that has to be thrown out because it's not scientific. It's not there's contradiction. There's contradiction in everything we do. Why? Because we're dealing with energy. Energy means contradiction. The world of duality means contradiction. There's hot, there's cold. You know what I'm saying? It's like, okay, you're up north. Where do you go for vacation?
South.
Okay. But the people in south, where do they go for vacation? North. Yeah, go see the snow. Like, wow, what's that stuff? You know? Does that make sense? Yeah. So yes, that's the point. It does not make sense. Yeah, you'd think that those from Ibiza would go to the Bahamas and vice versa, but somehow they don't. So that's the whole point. It's the lack of conformity of the material world that people are noticing. And they're perfectly fine with that. But when they get to philosophy, then they have a problem. But that's because they're looking with a mundane consciousness. Because, as pointed out here, there is no contradictions in Shastra. Anyone who brings it up is exposing themselves as a fool. Right? So that there's differences between the Shastras, difference within the Shastras, difference between the Acharyas. There's never any difference. So whenever we see this came up, you know, just like, was it last year before? When we were studying about the six schools of Vedanta. And then the Madhvas are trying to bring up that, you know, Ramanuja didn't do a good job, so now they had to step in and stuff like, this is mundane. There is no contradiction. So that they see like that, that means mundane. That's why Lord Chaitanya avoided their association. You understand? There is no contradiction. The Lord's unlimited. They're expressing different, taking different aspects from that, like you see in the prayers. Everybody's talking about the same thing, the Lord, and basically discussing the same points of philosophy, but the angles that they're coming from are quite different. That's uniqueness. That's personality. Right? So that's very important to understand, is that there is no contradiction in Shastra. If you see a contradiction, that means we don't have enough information, enough intelligence, enough piety to understand it. The Lord is not revealing. So the fault's not the Shastras, the fault is on our part. Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay. Gati means conception. The Lord is not covered by the gunas because there's conformity, samanyat, in Vedic statements concerning conceptions, gati, of the Lord, that he has knowledge, omniscience, endowed with all powers, perfect, pure, supreme, the supreme Atma, the cause of the universe, worthy of worship and the giver of liberation. The Lord is not covered by material gunas because all the Vedas define one Brahman in this way. So if the Veda says there's one Brahman and then says there's two, that means there must be multiple aspects within one. Right? Does that make sense? That's the whole point. You know, it's just like you say, there's the high court judge in the office and there's a high court judge at home. It's one person, but there's a difference. Right? So to take it, there's a difference, so that therefore the judge in the office doesn't exist. He's an illusion. Right? Or that they're two separate things, so they're not one person. You understand? That's what we're dealing with here. So that's why we say less intelligent. And the fun part is that generally the ones that are the most less intelligent are the ones that are perceived as the most intelligent. Right? See, the muda is just downright dumb. Right? So, you know, no major fault there. You know what I'm saying? He is what he is. But the so-called intelligent, their mayaya pratigyana, means maya has stolen their illusion. I mean, stolen their intelligence. So all they're left with is illusion. So they think they're very intelligent, but if you actually check, it's not very intelligent at all. Right? You know, it'd be just like, okay, you know, we're having, you know, all the relatives and everything are coming over. We're having a big, huge party, and we need to clear out the house and make it empty. So we'll stick everything in the house, we'll stuff it into this little closet. Right? Makes sense. Everybody does it, right? Anybody can do that in the universe. No. But the so-called most intelligent will say the whole universe is stuffed into an infinitesimal point that's so small you can't even see it. Where's the intelligence? Even if you could do that, that much mass, under that much pressure, the power that's there, you'd end up with a diamond. You know? Does that make sense?
Diamond. Huh? Big diamond.
No, very small diamond. Because it's so small, in fact. Where, you know what I'm saying? It's just they don't think. So because they live in a world of inconsistency, they think everything else is inconsistent. Is that okay? Okay, Brahman does not have two forms, saguna and nirguna. Smriti also says, Mata parataram nanyat kinchit asti dananjaya. There is nothing superior to me. So if there isn't two forms, what does that mean? It means it's two definitions of one form. Saguna means with transcendental qualities. Nirguna means without material qualities. So we're talking about the same entity.
Advayam.
Yeah. Okay. Bhagavatam verse reference. 1:228-29. Vasudeva para gveda, Vasudeva para makaha. Makaha, right? The big maka, right? Vasudeva para yoga, Vasudeva para kriyaha. Vasudeva param jnanam, Vasudeva param tapaha. Vasudeva paro dharmo, Vasudeva para gatihi. In the revealed scriptures, the ultimate object of knowledge is Sri Krishna, the personality of Godhead. The purpose of performing sacrifice is to please him. Yoga is for realizing him. All fruitive activities are ultimately rewarded by him only. He is the supreme knowledge, and all severe austerities are performed to know him. Religion, dharma, is rendering loving service unto him. He is the supreme goal of life. Okay. And then, Sutra Prakashika, 1:111. This sutra concludes the fifth adhikarana of this first pada of Vedanta Sutra, which addresses the question of whether the supreme truth is described by words or not. Right? So that's the whole point, is that we're saying he's able to be described by words. Then the whole point is if he's beyond the words than that, but through his grace, then it's revealed. So that's the whole point, is that the words, you can say you can't know by words, which is true. You can know only through the spiritual master, right? Who's coming, who's connected to the Lord. So therefore, by the Lord's grace, then those words can represent him. Otherwise, that's why others, then they have to speculate. Because they read the words, they don't understand. So the point is the words can be empowered. Does that make sense? The fact that Brahman is described in Shastra as nirguna was cause for doubt. If we take nirguna to literally mean devoid of qualities, then presumably words would fail to describe something with zero qualities. Here, so that's the point, is that since words can describe, that means you're describing qualities, so there must be saguna and nirguna. Right? So that they're two separate things. One's transcendental, which you can't describe, and the saguna is material, which therefore you're describing. But then by that, the Veda would be material. Then if it's material, why are they following it? Why are they so worried about their sannyas ashram and the respect that they'll get? Because that's all coming from the Veda, which is material. You understand? So we see is that what's their purpose? Their purpose is to be respected on the level of God. That's their ultimate goal. Therefore, those things that don't make sense, according to their philosophy, they finesse those because it actually attains the goal they want. Right? So. Here, Vyasadeva resolves these seemingly contradictory matters. He asserts that the Supreme Lord possesses transcendental qualities and is simultaneously described in the Vedic literatures as Nirguna. Sutra 1111. Shurutat vachcha. Surutavat. Because of being described in the Vedas, cha, and. The Lord has no material gunas, but has spiritual qualities, because that is the statement of the scriptures. Sri Govindabhasya. In the Black Yajurveda, it is said, the Lord alone has entered all beings. He is all-pervading. He is the antaryami of all beings. He is the controller of karma. He is the basis of all beings. He is the witness and the giver of consciousness. He is the possessor of shakti. He is beyond the gunas. Svetasvatara Upanishad 6.11. The Nirguna Lord is specifically described in the above verse. He is thus without material qualities, but capable of being described, having spiritual qualities. Right? So that's the point, is that this is the description of Nirguna Brahman. He has all these transcendental qualities. Like that. So therefore, when Nirguna means he's beyond the gunas, but you can describe him. So that means what are you describing is transcendental qualities. Right? The Mayavadis will say you're describing material qualities, so therefore the saguna Brahman is mundane. Right? Best of the mundane. They give Vishnu that much. But you know. But they'll put him in a lower position because they're Narayan, so they're above him. Right? But if they're Narayan, then that means then they would be also saguna Brahman, so they're also Maya, so then what's the glory? But how you say it. The claim that quote, the conception of the Nirguna Brahman can be indicated only indirectly, lakshana, and not directly with words. Since Brahman is supposedly devoid of signification by those terms, is false, for lakshana cannot be applied to something that words cannot describe. Right? So they're using that. Remember, what was the other term? Lakshana means is you're describing something, but it's more poetic, and then you have the other that's direct. Abhida, right? Like from Abhideya, Abhida. There's the Abhida Shakti and a Lakshana Shakti, or something like that. So, abhida means this direct meaning. And lakshana means like saying that Navadvipa is on the Ganges. So it's not floating in the middle of the river. Right? It just means it's on the bank. But by usage, you say it like that. So that's lakshana. It's not directly describing. So they're saying it can't be described, so therefore it's only lakshana. Right? Is that you understand their argument?
Lakshana also means hints, you know, providing some hints.
Hints. Yes, yes. Yeah. So they're giving that idea, right? So they're saying this is actually what it is. But then the Acharya is pointing out here is if that's the case, then how could it's still being able to be described? Why? Because lakshana is describing things that can be described. It's just putting together in a more indirect way. Right? Means Navadvipa exists, the river Ganges exists. Right? So you can describe these two things. But it's being described in an indirect way, or a poetic way, instead of directly. Does that make sense? So their idea is that, no, it's lakshana, so that's how, but the point is then lakshana means it's describing things that can be described. So they can't use it as an argument. Right? They're trying to say the indirect way is describing it because it can't be described, but indirect describes direct things in an indirect way. Does that make sense? Yes.
But it describes things that are from this world. So if we attribute them to Lord, then that lakshana can stay.
So just a question before we get into this. So then from this discussion, then you've gotten gain the intelligence to be able to make these distinctions here, or by associating with this and with the other things like that, you're turning into a Maya body?
Hopefully not.
Okay.
It sounds logical to me still.
No, but that's what they use. They use mental speculation, which is, it's logic that appeals to the mind.
So that's why I want to repeat that.
Yeah, it appeals to the mind, because all the things, the green bird and the green tree, it's all one. But it's still a green bird and a green tree. There's still two. But as soon as they say green bird, green tree, the greenness, it's all one, then because we like that, we just accept it and reject, you know what I'm saying? We drop the logic. So they're only using logic to, establish a particular motive that their mind has. And as soon as you get to that point, then they drop the logic.
We do the same.
We do it in everything. We do it in everything. You know, oh, I can't do this, oh, it's so hard, and this and that, and everything like this. Yeah, okay, I just got a phone call, this other guy says that opportunity is not available. You know, and then the same thing you just said, can't do. Well, you know, a little work's good for you, you know, get in there. And right? Yeah, so it's just whatever. So that's all they're doing. They're just doing it in a very intellectual way. Does that sound good? So the point is the fault in their argument is they're saying that nirguna can't be described. Therefore, you can't use the abhidha shakti to describe it. You can only use lakshana. But the point is lakshana is only describing things that can be described directly in an indirect way. You know, it's just like you say you say the name of the devotee over there, you know, like this and that. But then, you know, indirectly you say, you know, the one over there in the blue sari. But there is sari, it is blue, there is a person, they're all directly describable things. You're just using an indirect method to explain it. Does that make sense? So that's what he's pointing out as the weakness in their argument. Because their argument's standing on that you can't describe it directly, that's what the Shastras mean. So if you can describe it directly, that has to be material. And then the spiritual is only indirectly. So therefore they're saying that lakshana, then that they can describe. But the point is the lakshana is actually indirectly describing direct things. You understand? So therefore their argument is faulty. Does that make sense? So the point is they've been, see, of the acharyas, he's the, you know, except for Nimbarka and Vishnuswami, right? Then in recent times he's the earliest of the acharyas. So they've had, you know, 1,000 years to work on all these arguments so that they get it down right, you know? Does that make sense? You know, it's just, that's the thing. You have so much time, if it does, people work out ways of saying it that it sounds great, even though it's not. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay. And furthermore, the Lord, without material qualities, can still be the cause of creation. Just as someone, though invisible, can still create things. Right? So even though he's beyond, he's still creating the universe. He's the source of the universe. Because even the Acharya has said that Narayan is there before the creation. Right? So, you know, those points also they tend to finesse. Right? So instead of asking why is he contradictory, They don't. They take it that everybody else is. Okay, then the next point is, to say the Lord is without gunas but is endowed with qualities is a contradiction. That is not so. That misconception arises only from inability to understand the real meaning. So, we see here is that the point is made by the other side, and then immediately says, no, it's not that. Right? You don't kind of go around this way and that way. You say, no, it's not that. And then you define how. Okay, so because of their inability to understand the real meaning, that's why then it's a contradiction to them. Right? You find something contradiction that you can't understand. So, because the Mayavadis are generally, you know, more scholarly individuals, so they will say, I'm so smart, and if I can't understand it, there must be something wrong with it. Right? The same thing you find in the modern academia, is that if they don't understand it, it can't be right. Even though they don't have any background or any context to understand it in, they want to understand everything from their, you know, size of the little well they sit in. You know, our well is bigger than your well, right? I'm sitting in the Oxford or Harvard well, so that's a bigger well than the other wells. And so that still, when it comes to the ocean, they're still a little short. Negative words like nirguna indicate that the Lord has no material qualities. Words like omniscient affirm his positive qualities. Right? So you're just, because you can describe something in the positive and in the negative. So that's the whole point, is both ways you can describe. Does that make sense? So it's just a matter of, they're taking it that there's only one way of description. That makes sense?
This means he's a devoid of qualities like sattva and endowed with qualities related to his svarup. He wants to stress what? That sattva would be material.
This means he is devoid of qualities like sattva and endowed with qualities related to his svarup. Means sattva means material qualities, because they'll say he's the best of sattva gun. Means of all the qualities that are mentioned that you have from the non-moving living entities on up to the top. So the purest form of sattva, they'll say, is Vishnu. Right? You know, so they're just taking what Shastra says and then trying to place him within that. Right? So the difficulty, they're trying to categorize the Lord within the material definitions. Mm-hmm. Right? So when it says his sarup, so that means, just like before.
So he's transcendental?
Okay, words like omniscient, that means that's his sarup. And when it says nirguna, that means that what he's not. He's not the material qualities. He doesn't have the material qualities. So, yeah. There is no doubt about this. The Smritis describe this. The material qualities such as sattva do not exist in the Lord. May the preeminent Lord, who is purer than all pure beings, be pleased with me. Vishnu Purana 1943. Samasta Kalyana Gunatmako Sau. The Lord is full of unlimited auspicious qualities. Vishnu Purana.
Are those the Kalyana Gunas that we usually describe? Virya and Bala?
Yes. Those would be that, you know, the six, the, you know, the qualities of, you know, how you say, six opulences. You know, I mean, so there's unlimited qualities, but so that there's a way to grasp the greatness of the Lord, then there's always some group that's given. So either the six opulences, the Kalyana Gunas, the 64 qualities, like that, you know, or certain ones that are always brought out within the qualities, his mercy, his the sweetness, or his omniscience, or his all-powerfulness, or that he creates, maintains, destroys. So there's different angles that are taken. But it's all describing his sarup. That's the difference. So when it's devoid of, means when it's talking about nirguna, it means he doesn't have any material qualities. And so if you say he doesn't have sattva, then that means there wouldn't be anything lower. So you don't have to mention the others. Right? And so when it mentions qualities, that's about his form, his sarup. Right? Because that's where the qualities are, in the personal form. In the impersonal, then they're there in Brahman. You know, but that would be the next stage for these guys to catch. You know, how can something be impersonal and have qualities? But, you know, that's the point, is that they're impersonal qualities. So you have the personal qualities, which when Shastra's talking about it, it means him. And then the impersonal qualities are then the Brahman effulgence, which is simply the effulgence of all his qualities. So he has all the good qualities. That has an effulgence. So that effulgence also has qualities. But as the effulgence is impersonal, the qualities are impersonal. But that doesn't mean they don't exist. We're conditioned by the idea that impersonal means nothing. No, impersonal just means general. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? You say, we the people, so which people? You know what I'm saying? It's generic, so that means it's impersonal. Does that make sense? So most of what we deal with is impersonal. But we relate it to the persons. Right? So the point is the spiritual platform is the same. There's the person as the original. Then there's the generic aspects. He creates the universe. So he as a person is creating it. But what is it created on? It's created on Brahman. Right? So Brahman is transforming. That's how you get this universe. That's why we can say that the transformations of this universe, though real, are different from him as a person. So the impersonal includes everything, but at the same time, it's not his personality. That's where the difference is. So that's why he says here, his swarup. Does that make sense? Yes?
How do the impersonalists deal with the fact that a lot of the incarnations of God, their activities could hardly be defined as sattva. You know, in his pastime, in his leela.
But they generally don't deal with, that means other than, so the only time they deal with incarnations and things like that, one is possibly for meditation, because it's easier to meditate on something with form than without. But mainly they would discuss it in connection with the general populace, which they would consider less intelligent. So they like to hear the pastimes. But in this way, at least then they're associating with this higher principle of sattva. And so in that way they get purified, and then one day maybe they'll understand the nirguna Brahman. So it's how you say, with proper etiquette, pleasantly patronizing.
Yeah.
Like that. And that's it. You know what I'm saying? So they don't really deal with it. It doesn't matter to them. Because once you're working within the qualities here, what does it matter? Because for them, the ultimate is the nirguna. They don't understand that nirguna means without the material qualities, but the spiritual qualities are there. That's why they only get up to the neutral state. They only get to Brahman, because Brahman is the neutral state, where there's no material qualities, right? They don't see then, but there's the positive, but there's spiritual qualities. And so those qualities come from somewhere, because otherwise emptiness, how does it manifest qualities? It manifests because there's a person with qualities. So the Brahman is simply the effulgence of that person with qualities. Therefore, the effulgence has qualities. Right, so they can't tell that the Brahman has these two aspects. Like that. Does that make sense? So they see up to a particular limit, and for them that's the end. But for us, that's the beginning. Right? The beginning starts there, and then it goes on to the personal.
Yeah. I just don't know. You know, if they say that there's nirguna Brahman, there's saguna Brahman, and saguna Brahman is fully sattva, it's the highest principle of sattva, then how come when, you know, there's a lot of activities that Krishna does that can't be defined as sattva?
No, but the point is they don't worry about those things. That's the whole point.
They just dismiss it.
It's not a matter of dismissing it. It doesn't matter to them. It doesn't in any way get in the way of their position of being God. Their motive is to become God. So therefore, all these things won't be something that they worry about. You know what I'm saying? You know, the lady takes the car down to the garage to get it fixed. And when she, as long as when she goes to pick up the car, it works, she couldn't care less what was wrong. The mechanic is there, you know, the spark plug, this and that, yeah, whatever, and that drives off. Because it just doesn't matter. Because the point is to be able to drive the car around. You understand? So they don't apply their intelligence there. You know what I'm saying? But in another area, you know, then there may be some kind of thing, you know, which kind of makeup, not even just what color, but what kind, because how it spreads, how it does this, you know, so that then they'll get into the detail. But for the mechanic, he couldn't care less. You know, the only cosmetic thing he uses is that special funny soap that they have that cuts through grease, and, you know, it doesn't smell so bad. It's a new variety, so, you know, that's as good as it gets, you know. You understand? So that's the whole thing, is that where your motive is, that's all you care about, and anything outside of that, you don't care. So they don't worry about those things. But we're pointing out is that he's transcendental. So whatever he does is beneficial. So you get a spiritual result from whatever he does. Yeah. So we worry about it because we're worried about the Lord. They don't worry about it because they're not. Is that? Okay. Therefore, the Lord who is perfect and pure is describable by the Vedas. When the scriptures say the Lord has no name, such statements mean that he is beyond complete description. He also cannot be completely described because the Lord is supremely unique. And he cannot be completely described because he is infinite. A person who insists on the literal meaning of the words nirguna, etc., should be asked, can one understand Brahman by those words or not? Right? So we're saying Brahman is beyond, you can't describe by words, so why is it these words, they say, describe the Lord? Because if he's undescribable by words, why when you say nirguna, you say, oh, this is describing the Lord? Right? Because it's either he can be described or he can't be described. You can't use whichever matches your philosophy. If he says Brahman can be understood by words like nirguna, then Brahman can be described. If he says Brahman cannot be understood by words like nirguna, then the descriptions of Brahman in scripture would amount to being useless. Right? So therefore, why does he put his faith in something that is useless? If it can't be described, then what they're talking about has nothing to do with reality. And if it can describe nirguna Brahman, then why can't it describe saguna Brahman? Yes, so that's the whole point. So it's either it can describe or not. If it can describe, it can describe any aspect. If it can't describe, it can describe no aspect. Bhagavatam verse references. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu, is always transcendental to material qualities, and therefore is called nirguna, or without qualities. Because he is unborn, he does not have a material body to be subjected to attachment and hatred. Although the Lord is always above material existence, right? So attachment and hatred come because our attachment and hatred is based on our body. Something that we consider valuable for the body, then there's attachment for. Something that we consider is not, that we have hatred for. It's always in connection with the body. It's not in connection with the soul. Does that make sense? Yeah. Although the Lord is always above material existence, through his spiritual potency appeared and acted like an ordinary human being, accepting duties and obligations, apparently like a conditioned soul. So, therefore, he has a body, but it's spiritual, so there's nothing material that's favorable or unfavorable to it. So therefore he has no friend or enemy. But he accepts the duties that are there, so that's why it appears that he's acting within the mundane. Like that. But the point is whatever he does is transcendental because his body's transcendental. Footnote 46. This verse marks the beginning of Sukadeva Goswami's reply to Maharaj Pariksit's question in the seventh canto concerning the Lord's apparent partiality. Just as, for the ignorant Mayavadi, accepting a saguna form is a defect for nirguna Brahman. Similarly, to the mudha Krishna's favoring some persons and killing others is also a defect. Srila Prabhupada stresses that rectifying this prima facie misunderstanding is the key to spiritual life. But so this goes back to what you were saying, is that to make us say that, oh, this is good and this is not good, he's doing that. So Prabhupada points out the mudha will look at that one. Because he's saying that this is good, that's bad based on the material. But if we're looking at the transcendental, what does it matter, good, anything within the material world? If it's all illusion, it doesn't matter anyway. So that's why the Mayavadis wouldn't consider it. Right, but the common man, he would consider it because he's working on what's good and bad within the material. Right? Does that make sense? So then here is that this will be the prima facie for establishing the position of the Lord. Right? Because if you have a case, the first thing you have to do is establish this prima facie. It means, what's the actual evidence? Do you have a case? Does that make sense? Yes. So Srila Prabhupada stresses, okay, the so-called attachment, detachment, and obligations pertain to the material nature, which is an emanation from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But whenever the Lord descends and acts in the material world, he does so in his spiritual position. Although his activities materially appear different, spiritually they are absolute and non-different. Right? Because it appears, oh, he's killing the demons, but by killing the demons, they're liberated and brought to the transcendental platform. Right? By his favoring the devotees, they give up all their attachment to the material world and become situated on the transcendental platform. So the effect for both is the same. Right? But according to their mentality, how they're approaching the Lord, he's making a distinction. Right? So the equality means everyone's dealt with according to their nature. That's the equality. That's the equality, right? Does that make sense? Not that everybody gets the same thing, right? Everybody gets according to their nature. So because they're favorable, they get a position, transcendental position that's favorable to the Lord. And for the demons, then they get a position that's neutral, right? Because they're inimical to the Lord on the material platform, so they don't have a similar thing on the spiritual platform. So it just brings them up to the neutral state. They become situated spiritually, but they don't have a relationship with the Lord. Because if you're inimical, means you technically don't have a relationship. So they come to that neutral state. Does that make sense? So everybody gets how they deal with the Lord. So he deals equally. Though on the material platform, it appears very different. Right? Does that make sense? So, from looking at it spiritually, it has variety. If you look at it materially, then we'll see it's contradictory, it's good, it's bad, it's this, it's that. No, these things. Does that make sense? Okay. This is an imposition upon the Supreme Lord to say that he is envious of anyone or friendly to anyone. In Bhagavad Gita 9:11, the Lord clearly says, Avajananti mam mudha, manushim tanum ashritam. Fools deride me when I descend in a human form. Krishna appears on this earth or within the universe without any change in his spiritual body or spiritual qualities. Indeed, he is never influenced by the material qualities. He is always free from such qualities, but he appears to act under material influence. This understanding is aropita, or an imposition. Right? So that's because we have a concept, we then place our concept on the other aspects that we view. In other words, we have a field of activities, which means how we contact the world through our senses. So depending upon the quality of our senses and upon the quality of what we have in the way of facilities and all that, what's important to us, our values, we'll impose that upon this world that we see. And we happen to see other people within this world, but we're perceiving them through our senses. And so we will apply our values upon them. Right? So without training, we can't actually broaden that. Right? Does that make sense? So it's not an inherent thing. This idea is, though, it's just natural that everybody will be nice and wonderful and everything like that. No, it's association, it's training. Because you will perceive the world through your senses and your values. Right? That's how you're going to deal. So unless there's training, you won't change that. You won't adjust that. Yes, Atmavan Manyate Jagat. So this is Arupita. Right? Does that make sense? So in the beginning, we also means it's not the point being made here, but just off this word, Arupita means in devotional service, that's what we're doing. When we call it mixed devotional service, why is it mixed? Because of this Arupita aspect. We're taking, this is valuable to me, I will use that connected to the Lord. You understand? So, now as long as it's because I value it, that's why I'm offering it, then there'll be the mix. As soon as it's, I want to please Krishna, and this is what my conditioning can do. This is the facilities I have. It's just like, I want to cook for Krishna. So you go into the kitchen, you see what's available. And then from what's available, you do your best to make something nice. That's then the purest position. You understand? So that's what it's meaning, is that there's no Arupita there. It's not that you're not using your conditioning, but it's not because of the value of your conditioning why you're doing something. Does that make sense? Right. Someone values management, therefore now he wants to manage for Krishna. So that's what we recommend. But we also point out that because of his attachment to management, that's why he's doing it. So then if the manager's going well, he may be inspired. The manager's not going well, he may not be inspired. But the point is if he's a manager, then he's going to manage whether it's going nicely or not, because that's what he can do for Krishna. We see the difference? So the technical point of what is the mix is the Arupita aspect. Does that make sense?
You have conditioning, but you have a pure intention, like, I know I'm terrible, I'm fallen, but I really want to try to please Krishna. Does intention come from the soul? Like, where do you get, like, that pure intention from? Is it separated from?
So you want to know if it's eBay, Amazon, or Walmart, Kmart, Tesco. We're not getting any Dollar General. That one really doesn't make sense. So in other words, yes, it has to come from the soul. Where else will it come from? Because the soul is what desires. That's the freedoms we can desire.
Oh, so if we desire bad things, it's also come from the soul.
Yes. But it filters through the conditioning. Because the soul wants to be happy. So bad things means that the soul thinks bad things will make them happy, though it never will. Good things don't make you happy either. But they're less trouble. Pleasing the Lord, that makes the soul happy, because the soul is transcendental, therefore only transcendental desire will make the soul happy. Yeah. But situating yourself in the environment of that is considered good, that's the better position to connect to the Lord. Because what's good by the Shastra is what Krishna considers good. And what's bad is what Krishna considers bad. Right? But that's a wide variety. So then within that, then we may have our particular individual taste within good and bad. But the point is what Shastra recommends, that's all within what Krishna considers good. But it's only good because of its connection to Krishna. That's why we say all the different Vedic recommended things, one's study, one's austerities, the following of Varn Ashram, performance of occupational duties and everything. If it's not connected to Krishna, it's a waste of time because its only purpose is to please Krishna. Right? But because it's in the material world, people can follow it without trying to please Krishna. But at least they're more pious than the ones that don't accept that. So, okay. So this understanding is an imposition, right? So they're saying, "I do this; it's not a good thing." So the Lord's doing this, therefore it's not a good thing. So that's aropita. They're imposing on the Lord. Right? Therefore, Krishna says, "Janma karma cha me divyam." Whatever he does, being always transcendental, has nothing to do with material qualities. Evam yo vedi tattvataha. Only devotees can understand the truth of how he acts. Right? Others can't understand. Even if you're situated in goodness, you can't understand. I remember I mentioned before, I met one couple in Delhi. Very nice, you know, they're devotees and very active and that. And I noticed a lot of pictures of Ramachandra in the house. And I asked the husband about, you know, you're devotees of Krishna, so why so many pictures of Ramachandra? It wasn't like devotees of Krishna, there's all variety and there happens to be also one of Ramachandra in that. No, there's a lot of pictures of Ramachandra. And he says, well, my wife actually, she's a devotee, but she doesn't like Krishna. Right? Because Ram, he does everything very nice and according to Dharma, but Krishna's off dancing with the gopis and that's immoral, so she doesn't like Krishna because he's immoral. You know? So this is aropia. Right? So even though they're a devotee, but you know, her connection to Ramachandra, with time she'll get purified and appreciate. Right? So it's a matter of taste of the Lord. But she's imposing whatever he does is transcendental. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. The fact is that Krishna is never partial to anyone. He is always equal to everyone. But because of imperfect vision, influenced by material qualities, one imposes material qualities upon Krishna. And when one does so, he becomes a mudha, a fool. Right? So that will be, in that individual's devotional service, that will be the weakness. That will create a problem.
Yes. Mayavad is when they impose upon themselves qualities of Krishna. That's also an opita?
Yes, and that's also Maya. Because see, if Krishna is the ultimate nirguna, if it's saguna, so then those sagunas are still material, so if they impose them on themselves, then they're still mundane. Plus, they don't even have them in the first place, so that's where it really gets weird. So it's an illusion within an illusion. Yeah, so it gets really weird.
I missed that because I didn't hear the question. I'm sorry, I missed that little experience. I didn't really hear the questions
here. Yeah. It's just, I'm trying to remember. See, because when I speak, I'm speaking on what's happening now. It means I won't remember what the last sentence is. So when you bring it up, I have to sit and think, you know, what were we talking about? Because I don't... The Mayavadis, they impose on themselves that they have all the qualities of God. But the point was is that if God... having qualities is the inferior material position, then they're imposing these same material qualities upon themselves. And so what's the point? It's all illusion anyway. Plus, they don't even have those qualities, so it's an illusion on the illusion. Like that. That was the... Okay. When one can properly understand the truth, one becomes devoted and nirguna, free from material qualities. Simply by understanding the activities of Krishna, one can become transcendental. And as soon as one is transcendental, he is fit to be transferred to the spiritual world. Tyaktva deham punar janma naitimam eti sorjuna. One who understands the activities of the Lord in truth is transferred to the spiritual world after he gives up his material body. So here, in truth means you actually understand the transcendental position. So that means in truth means it's revealed. Not in truth means it's facts. That's the point, is Facts you may be able to comprehend, but truth, that's something else. What's the truth about those facts? That is only if the Lord reveals, one understands. Right? Otherwise, one will take facts and one will impose upon it one's own value system and therefore come up with one's own idea of what it is. So that's why the modern concept of truth, it just means facts the way I like to hear them. That's the meaning of the word truth. Not truth means facts how Krishna, you know, likes to see them. That doesn't figure. Okay. Okay, cool. Is this the whole rest of it, or this is just part of it?
I think it's just part of it.
Yeah, see his little thing, because he said it's about the big, yeah. As big as the other. I think this gets us to the end of the pada, I think.
Not sure.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Okay, so Adhikarana 6. Brahman is full of bliss. Anandamaya Adhikaranam. Summary. The Lord is composed of bliss. Right. So now that we've established the Lord's position, now he is full of bliss. Why? Because that will make him the goal. Everybody's trying to be happy, so he is the reservoir of happiness, therefore he will be the goal. Right? Sutra reference, 1.1.12 through 19. Okay, so this is the whole next Adhikarana. Summary of Adhikarana 6. Early in this work, Srila Vyasadeva established that Brahman is in fact noble and can be described in words. Ikshatarana Shabdam, 1.1.5. He then spent the next 6 sutras allaying any doubts over whether this Brahman from the Upanishads could refer to anything less than the Supreme Absolute Truth. Right? So anything less means that they're taking Nirguna Brahman is just the Brahma Jyoti. So it's not about something less than the Supreme Lord. It's about the Lord himself as a person. Right? From now, Sutra 12, Anandamayo Bhyasata, until the end of the first Adhyaya, Srila Vyasadeva will prove that the statements of the Vedic literatures are intended to describe Brahman. In the first part of Vyasa discusses those words of the Vedic literatures, word like aksha, prana, and jyotish, which, taken by themselves, would not necessarily refer to Brahman, but which, in their Vedic context, certainly do refer to Brahman. Baladev Vidyabhushan introduces this section as follows, right? Because the words themselves, because we're used to the words in the classical Sanskrit, so because of the aspect of the poetic and everything like that, then they can, and generally more direct meanings we will attribute to them, they could be so many things, right? But in the Vedas, because they're generally talking about the indirect meanings or obscure meanings, and so generally the obscure, what's the obscure? The obscure is the Lord, or the qualities of the Lord, right? Because that's, you have the thing itself, so that's the obvious. So that's what the classical is generally talking about. But what's the obscure point of that? Right? Behind that, the metaphysics, and behind that, the Lord. Right? Does that make sense? So that's why then, within the Vedic context, he says, then it would be, these words would more indicate the Lord. But in the classical sense, they wouldn't necessarily. Right, so it's a very different. So we see is when we get up to a certain level, then the acharyas, they can deal with making this bridge between the presentation within the classical Sanskrit back to its origin in the Vedic Sanskrit. Does that make sense? So Srila Prabhupada is doing that, Baladev Vidyabhushan, Jiva Goswami is doing that, Bhaktivinoda Thakur does this. Some of the acharyas, they do like this. So it's a natural position. Right, because everything has to be based on Shruti, on the Veda. Right? Balade Vidyabhushan introduces this section as follows. Let us have faith in the powerful, pure Lord, full of bliss and knowledge, in reference to whom words like endowed with bliss become truly significant. Brahman was established to be expressible through words, so that Brahman could be shown as the conclusion of the Vedas expressed in words. Now that fact is demonstrated in the rest of the first chapter in all its four padas. In the first section, pada, words generally thought of as indicating other objects are shown to indicate Brahman. Right? So the idea is that the Vedic literature, whatever it's describing, it's actually describing Krishna. Right? One is describing Krishna, one is originally as the person, because he has all these different qualities himself. But it's also describing Krishna in his expansions as the material energy, or the spiritual energy, or the jivas. Does that make sense? So like, let's say in the Vedic verse it's referring to Indra. So it does mean Indra, he is the lord of everything. He is the king of, kings. But it also then refers to Indra, who is a part and parcel of the Lord, who represents that power of being king of the universe. Because Krishna is the king of the universe, but that potency is given to Indra to do that. So it infers both of them. But his point is ultimately it's referring, if you understand its ultimate sense of referring to Krishna, then you actually understand the verse. And then you understand how to apply it connected to Indra. Does that make sense? So that's the whole point of the Vedic Sanskrit, is that actually it's all referring to Brahman. Right? So therefore, Indra, as part of the universal form, that means you're dealing with Brahman, right? The transformations of Brahman. But those transformations originate in the Supreme Lord himself. Right? According to his desire, then the energies transform. Does this make sense? Right? He's the cause of all causes.
So then the Vedanta Sutra will be giving the hermeneutics of the Samhitas.
Yes, so they'll be giving the hermeneutics of everything. That's why it's Uttara Mimamsa. Because Jaimini is given how to deal with it on the lower level of Indra means Indra, and by worshipping him you can get to the heavenly planets. But the point is where does Indra's potency come from? Therefore, to be happy by worshipping Indra doesn't mean going to the heavenly planets, but going back to the spiritual world and having a relationship with the original Indra. Like that. So. Okay. This particular Adhikarna will show that the Anandamaya referred to in Taittiriya Upanishad 2.5 is the Supreme Brahman and not the Jiva. Right? Because in other words, Mayavadi's got their Maya take on everything, right? So they're going to Sutra 1.1.12. Ananda Mayo Abhyasata. Ananda, bliss, Maya, full of, Abhyasat, because of repetition. Ananda Maya Purush is the Lord because of repetition at the beginning and the end. Summary of Sutra 1.1.12. Vishaya. In the Taittiriya Upanishad, it's said that Anandamaya is the highest stage of existence. The Anandamaya is Brahman, right? So Shamshaya. So now this will be the doubt that will come up, right? Is the Anandamaya person the individual spirit soul or the supreme Brahman, right? So that's what you're trying, because if you have qualities, then they'll be thinking it means the Jiva. Or on the thing is that the living entity is trying to become that Brahman. So if the Jiva can become, then it refers to the Jiva, because he will be, so because there's a non-difference. So the Mayavadis want it to refer to themselves, because they're really trying to become happy. Mm-hmm. They're really working hard at it here. Purva Paksha, so then the how you say?
The
counter-argument to the Shamshaya.
No? It's the reason of the,
no, this is the,
of
reason,
the opponent.
The explanation.
It means it's our reason, but it'll be in counter to their doubt. Does that make sense?
No, it is theirs only. Mayavadi's
group. Oh, this is theirs. Purvapaksha is their reason.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, okay. Okay, and the Siddhanta will be back to us. Okay. Because Anandamaya is described as a person, it must refer to the conditioned spirit soul residing in a material body. Okay. So that's their reasoning. Means that because it says it's a person, therefore it has to refer to the jiva, because only the jiva has a body, because Brahman is nirguna, there's no body, so it can't, no body, literally. Siddhanta. Srila Vyasadeva answers this argument by speaking the following sutra, Anandamaya Vyasat. The word Anandamaya, full of bliss, used in the Vedic literatures must refer to the Supreme Brahman, for it is repeatedly used to describe him. Because the jiva, you would have it in that context, but it's always referring to the transcendental position. So if it's repeatedly saying it like that, why would not be mean the Lord? Sri Govinda Bhasha. Vishaya. In the section beginning of Brahmavid Apnoti Param and Sava Esha Purushon Rasamaya, there are sequential descriptions of Maya, Pranamaya, Manomaya, and Vijnanamaya stages of existence. Footnote. Okay, I guess we'll get into that on Thursday, because that's not going to get over in 55 seconds. Okay. Yes?
So I've heard this Vedanta Sutra aphorism, Anandamaya Vyasa, translated in two ways. By nature, the Supreme Lord is blissful. And the second way is, by nature, the living entities are pleasure-seeking. So both those translations... good or what?
It depends upon where you got the second one. If it's from the Acharyas, then that would be referring to the jiva being pleasure-seeking, will therefore seek pleasure, but the only place where it can find pleasure that matches itself is in the Supreme Lord.
Yeah.
But if one got that translation from just some book, then it's probably the Mayavadis, their translation, trying to say it's about the jiva. You know, so that's what that's what this Adhikarana is addressing. Okay. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki, Jai Natai Gaura Premanand ki.